The following is a Hoop Ball presentation.
What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome back to the show. This is Hoop Ball Grizz. I'm your host, David Williams. Today we've got a very special collaboration show with Mr. Brad Harden from the Hoop Ball Hawks podcast. He's going to come on. We talked a little bit of Ja versus Trey, the budding rivalry between these two teams, the trash talk on Twitter, and quite a bit more. It's a great show. We had a great time recording it. Look forward to doing more with Brad. Hope you guys enjoy it. Here we go.
Yeah! Hello and welcome back to Hoop Ball Hawks, the show here on the Hoop Ball Network that is taking flight, where we cover everything regarding the Atlanta Hawks. And this is a Hoop Ball collaboration, as I have Mr. David Williams here for Hoop Ball Grizz. David, how are you doing today?
I'm good, man. I would be better had we won the game, but it is what it is. It's early in the season. The Grizzlies started off 0-2 last season as well and bounced back. So hopefully we can turn it around.
I have, you know, the utmost confidence that you guys will turn it around, as you guys are a really, really gritty, tough team. I know that when I was looking at the schedule, as far as you know, the first five games for the Hawks, we had the Bulls, who I said that definitely is a winnable game. We had the Grizzlies, which was a toss up because the Grizzlies are tough. We had the butt whooping in the preseason. We got our butts whooped last year against you guys, and then we had the comeback effort in the preseason where we basically needed our bench to step up because our starters weren't getting it done. And then we have a game against the Pistons tomorrow as our home opener. So I thought that if we could go 2-1 there, losing to the Grizzlies, going into a back-to-back against Brooklyn, yikes. Like, I mean, that's just a tough way to start. But so we really needed this win, and I know that the Grizzlies really needed the win to kind of get off the one-game snide, because obviously you don't want to start the season 0-2 where they are now. So going into the game, what did you want to see out of this Grizzlies team to try to turn the tide and get to that 1-1 start?
The second unit is key. Going all the way back to the bubble, the Grizzlies have struggled when Ja Morant is not on the floor with figuring out what they need to do to get the offense going. And it's just a reoccurring thing. Everybody just attributed it to, okay, Tyus Jones went down, so that's why the second unit is struggling so much. But, you know, Tyus is here, and he's healthy and playing, and the second unit so far this year has been terrible again. And I know that they're better than that, but they just haven't shown it to this point.
Yeah, and certainly us as the Hawks fans, we are used to, you know, with our bench, usually in the past, especially the last couple of years, we just kind of just have some stand-in players. Especially when Trae Young is off the floor, the production offensively just drops because he's the known facilitator. He initiates offense. He can get his own shot. And that is something that I saw similar to, you know, with the Grizzlies and Ja Morant last night. I know going into the game for the Hawks, I knew that our bench had to be a key, especially with all the injuries that we had on our end. I know you guys had injuries as well going into the game, that our bench really needed to step up and produce with players like Gallinari out, who is a bench player for us, with Capella out, who was going to step up in that front court. So it was a lot of questions that we had to answer on our end, but absolutely we were paying as far as bench production. But as I spoke to the injuries, how much do you think the injuries to Winslow, JJJ, and others are playing into, you know, the current 0-2 start for the Grizzlies?
You know, obviously we know what Jaren brings to the floor and how he's going to fit in this office and offense and what he does. So, you know, that's a big hole. Jaren's the second best player on the team. And when you're missing a guy of, you know, that type of production, that's going to be a hole. And you know that we understood that going into the season. As far as the hole that we're missing with Justice, we don't really know yet because he hasn't played. You know, he practiced going into the bubble and then he got injured again right before actually playing games with us in the bubble. So I don't know what he's going to bring to the table. I know I watched Justice in Miami And I know what type of player he can be when he's healthy. So obviously I think that he's going to be productive, but whenever I'm taking things into consideration, I don't really look at the, you know, Justice being out causing that big of an effect, because this Grizzlies team played without him all year last year, but you know, you're missing a big guy in Jaren. But I don't like to use that as an excuse. This game was definitely a winnable game. You guys had, the Hawks had some guys step up big off the bench. And I don't even Nathan Knight, is he one of your two-way guys? I didn't know anything about him heading into this game, and then he just came out and he was knocking shots down. I'm like, who the heck is this kid?
Yeah, he was our undrafted rookie out of William & Mary, and he was essentially brought on to be basically two-way player, play on our G League team in College Park. And with the injury to the front court, with Capella out, with Gallo out, we had to have some front court players step up. We had to do that small ball lineup to start the game, which made me a little bit nervous, because Valanciunas is a mountain of a man in the middle. And in the two preseason games, Valanciunas really dominated the Hawks in the paint. It was hard to get him off the spot. He was getting every rebound. And I know in that first preseason game, he was even stepping back and hitting threes with confidence. So he really scared me. And I knew that going into the game that the Hawks really had the game plan well. And I thought that it was a great team defensive effort on Valanciunas, really frustrating him. He still got his 13 points. He still got his 12 rebounds and his 4 assists last night. But I thought that they really played really good defense on him. And that was a tribute to everybody on the team stepping up. DeAndre Hunter having to move to the 4, Collins playing the 5, Fernando coming off the bench, Nathan Knight, as you mentioned, coming in, really providing a spark for this team. Because earlier in the game, you know, Memphis was on a roll. Our starters weren't really playing with a lot of energy. And it was one of those patented Hawks starters starting slow, bench had to come in and re-energize the team, and then Hawks gain momentum. It's a trend that I saw in the preseason, and it led to some preseason losses, and it led to us having to fight even harder to get some wins in the preseason. So I was starting to see that last night, but I thought that the defense that they played on Valanciunas and how they frustrated him, and you know, keeping the Grizzlies out of the paint, which you guys have a wonderful knack of getting in the paint, wonderful knack getting in the paint, you know, cleaning up the glass on both ends of the floor. And so I know that even with the injuries, I saw a lot of things that I liked from your Grizzlies. And I want to ask you about slow-mo. Kyle Anderson, after the shoulder surgery, his shot looks so much better this year. And I think he's going to be a real big key for you guys, because he can just do it all for you.
He can. And so it's funny that a guy that I have on my show quite often, Isaac Simpson, he's been on my show a few times now, and he really likes slow-mo. And I was on the side of, you know, he's 27. He doesn't really fit the timeline. I think that they're going to move him. And I didn't really change my mind on that. I still think that, you know, obviously he's a little bit older. He's not really a timeline guy, but I see what he brings to the game, what he brings to the floor every night. I was surprised, you know, if you would have asked me going into this game, somebody's going to have a 20-14 game, who would it be? Slow-mo would have been way down on that list. You know, he would not have been one that I would have picked off right away. I like him, and you can plug him in. You know, if you need a small ball 5, you can play him at the 5. He's starting at the 4 with Jaren out. You can play him at the 3. You know, he just makes winning plays. It's what he does. And he had a fantastic game last night, and it's creating a lot of buzz for him, you know, in the Grizz fan base. And then, you know, also fantasy, what HoopBall is around doing. There's a lot of fantasy chatter around Kyle Anderson and what is he going to do? Is he going to be valuable or not? But he kept us in the game, because, you know, for the, you know, whether it was defensive scheme or our JV, seemed like he really checked out early in that game last night. And I don't know what was going on. I thought, okay, Capella's out, and I'm looking at the Hawks roster. I'm like, who do they got that's really going to check JV? I thought he was going to have a monster game, and he didn't. Yeah, I mean, a double-double is good. It's not an awful game by any stretch. But with the guys that they had defending him, I thought that he would produce quite a bit more, and he just didn't have the energy. He wasn't bringing it last night. There were a couple times on defense that he could have – you know, made one step and made a guy change direction and maybe give somebody else time to get over and help. And he didn't even do that. So there were plenty of holes in his game last night. But like you said, the Hawks done a great job with what they had, game planning and, you know, sending the extra guy at him, making him make tough decisions. And it's all, you know, there's always two sides to the story. There's, you know, what the defense is doing against you and then what kind of mindset is a player having in the game. And I think that it was a combination of both last night. The Hawks were doing a good job sending extra guys at him, you know, kind of helping get him off of that spot so he couldn't just get down in there and play bully ball. And then it just felt like he was disconnected last night for sure.
Yeah, and I had the same sentiments as you going into the game. I'm like, man, he's gonna kill us in the paint. He's gonna kill us. And they came in with a really good game plan. I also saw somebody on Twitter last night. I think he's from Atlanta, but I think he's more of a Heat fan, so he kind of hates the Hawks. He tweeted out, he was like, "They're lucky that Valanciunas wasn't Valanciunas tonight." And I tweeted at him, I said that we are lucky that he wasn't Valanciunas last night, 100%. But he was kind of discrediting the Hawks defense that I alluded to and how they game planned for him. And another player that I thought that we was key in us limiting was Dylan Brooks, who killed us in the preseason. Dylan Brooks, Josh Lloyd tweeted, he said that he hates watching Dylan Brooks, but he hates him, but he can acknowledge that he is improving. And mm-hmm. I don't hate Dylan Brooks personally. I don't hate him. Being a Pels fan, I kind of dislike him because obviously, you know, Pels Grizzlies rivalry we talked about off air. But as a player, he has steadily improved, you know, year by year on both ends of the floor and just his confidence shooting the ball. And I knew that going into the game, we really had to challenge him because it seemed like in the preseason, the Grizzlies were getting open three after open three, and it was always Brooks. It was always Allen. It was always Desmond Bane, who, side note, I love Desmond Bane. I really liked him as a late first-round pick if the Hawks traded back in the first round. And when I saw that he landed to you guys with the Grizzlies, I was happy about it. So I think your Grizzlies fans are really going to love Desmond Bane. So I'll get your take on that after I talk a little bit about Dylan Brooks. Last night, we held Dylan Brooks to 4 of 11. He still hit four threes, but to be four, he hold him to a 4 of 11, I'll take that as a Hawks fan. And for him to shoot 8 of 23 and have 19 points, he scored 19 points on 23 shots, that's really not inefficient. I will take that because the games where the Grizzlies usually win, Dylan Brooks is scoring a lot of points, but he's efficient. Mm-hmm. And they really did a wonderful job of, like I said, keeping the Grizzlies out of the paint, forcing three-point shots, and actually closing out on three-point shooters and trying to contest those three-point shots, which was not the case in the preseason. So I want to get your take on Dylan Brooks, you know, from the outside looking in, and I want to see how you feel about Desmond Bane early because I really like Desmond Bane.
So Dylan gets a ton of hate from this fan base. You know, he's the scapegoat a lot of times. There's a few things that I like about Dylan. You know, you spoke on his confidence a little bit. Sometimes he's overconfident and sometimes he needs to get rid of the ball. But if you go back, there's a, you know, I shared it on Twitter through the Hoopball Grizz page. He knows about the holes in his game. He knows that he gets tunnel vision. He's listening to the coaches. He's being receptive to the coaching. And that's a huge plus. He's a 24-year-old guy and he can still grow and people are ready to just give up on him. I'm like, man, you can't, I will challenge you and I want you to, you know, tweet at me if you find somebody, but this is what I've sent this out to a bunch of Grizzlies fans and nobody's got back to me. Find a guy out there that's making less money than Dylan Brooks or that is on a better contract than Dylan Brooks. That's doing the things that he's doing night in and night out. He's guarding the best player on the other team and he's scoring 15 points a game. You're really like, I'm not going to tell you with 100% confidence that there's nobody out there, but there's not going to be many. The contract that he got and what the Grizzlies are paying him for what he brings to the table, you're not going to find a better deal. He has to get better. He looked really good in the first game distributing the ball. And that's something he talked about in that video is he wants to be a secondary playmaker. You need that from him because, you know, that's if they stagger the starters and he's coming in when Ja's coming out, and he can be your secondary playmaker, that's going to bode well for the entire team. And the way Dylan handles the ball, he can create his own shot. And outside of Ja Morant, before this year, I think Desmond Bane has a little bit of this too, but before this year, outside of Ja Morant, Dylan Brooks was the only guy that can create his own shot. And so you need him to do that and be efficient. And like you say, the 8-for-23 last night, the Grizzlies are probably not winning games when Dylan Brooks is going 8-for-23. They're winning when he's going, you know, 10 of 16, 10 of 15. You know, he's shooting 60%+ from the field because he's getting good open looks. And the Hawks defense done a great job of disrupting him. And something that I saw late in the game that I thought was great on the Hawks, they shifted DeAndre Hunter over onto Ja Morant quite a few times. I saw that. And DeAndre Hunter, he's a long guy. So, you know, he had a block on Morant late in the game that was key to you all closing the game out. And the only reason he can make that block is because of his length. You know, if you have a smaller guy on him, Ja probably gets that shot up and it goes in, but Hunter was able to close that gap with his length and make that play. So I'm bouncing around a little bit here, but back to Dylan. I love Dylan Brooks. I love what he brings to the table, and the contract that he's on, I think, is very team friendly. In 3 years, if it doesn't work out, okay. You know, you've spent the money. You have to look this year. I'm not a playoffs or bust guy for the Grizzlies. I think this is a learning year. You find out what pieces you have and what pieces you need. Is Grayson Allen going to be a rotation guy? Can you keep him around? Is he worth signing again? Is Dylan Brooks going to be worth his contract? Is he your starting two or three, or is he coming off of the bench? What's Desmond Bane going to do? You signed De'Anthony Melton to this contract. Is his offense going to improve? We know what Melton's going to bring to the table on the defensive end, but he's got to have some sort of production on the offensive end because he was basically unplayable in the bubble with the way that he shot the ball. It was terrible. It was something like, I think, 17 or 19% from the field for De'Anthony Melton in the bubble. So I think this year for the Grizzlies is a learn year. You have guys, you know, that Ja Morant is a part of your core. You know that Brandon Clark is a part of your core, and you know that Jaren Jackson is. So does Justice fit in with this team? Or are we moving on from him? Does Grayson fit in? Are we moving on? And so if they miss the playoffs, the top probably, I would say at least the top 10, maybe even deeper than that in this next year's draft, are elite guys. And if you land any of those guys, they're going to be a huge help to your team. So if the Grizzlies miss the playoffs, end up in the lottery, I'm completely fine with that this year. I just want to see growth and kind of get a better gauge, better feel of where they're at and what they're missing.
Yeah, I definitely understand your sentiments. And going into the season, looking at the Western Conference, I kind of had the same thoughts as well. I didn't really peg the Grizzlies as a playoff team. Not because I don't think they have the talent to be in the playoffs. I just think that it's gonna be tough. And you're absolutely right. This is a much deeper draft this upcoming season. And if they happen to not make the playoffs and get a pretty decent draft pick, I don't think anybody in Memphis is gonna be complaining with that. Cause I really think Desmond Bane is gonna have a really good year this year for you guys. And he's a guy who can go and shoot confidently from the 3-point line outside of Dylan Brooks, outside of Grayson Allen. What we're seeing a little bit from Kyle Anderson in Memphis, he's just a very confident guy and a confident player. And no one on your team lacks confidence. You just need a little bit more talent. And with Desmond Bane, he can facilitate an offense off the bench as well when given opportunity. And I really like De'Anthony Melton as well. So you have some pieces in Memphis that really bode well for you guys' future. And it's about, like you said, growth. It's about development, and if they have to take a step back this year to take a step forward in the draft and see what other pieces they can add and kind of move off the roster and get better fits for Ja Morant in this roster in free agency next year, which is going to be a deeper free agency pool, I say I'm all forward for the Memphis Grizzlies, because one thing that your coach has instilled into this team is that your team comes ready to compete every night. They're not going to quit. And that's what really, you know, had me jarred a little bit for Valanciunas last night, because you're absolutely right. It seemed like he just, you know, stopped at times because he was frustrated in the game. And that's really uncharacteristic for this Memphis team under this coach. And that's something that you have the pillars that make a championship roster as far as, you know, the intangibles and the characteristics that you want infused into a team. And you have talent, you have some pieces. Is at this point, just like with Trae Young in here in Atlanta, it's about finding complementary pieces for this roster and seeing and developing the young players that you have to see what you can turn into another player via trade, or who else you can get through free agency, or like you said, take a step back, take a step forward, see who you can get in the drafts, and continue to build upon this thing in Memphis, because John Morant is a generational talent. He's a generational talent. The guy had 44 in game one, which really scared me going into this game against the Hawks last night. And for him to still have 27, even though he wasn't as efficient, he was still effective. And he was kind of missing in spells, and I thought that lent to some of the good defensive play that the Hawks had on John Morant, which is something new for Hawks fans to say. The defense of the Hawks really played a role in last night's game, and they played a role in the first two games of the season thus far. And I'm really interested to see how that continues to develop for the Hawks going forward. But this is a team that they're going to compete every night. They're going to be a tough out. Like I said, it may have been a 10-point win for the Hawks, but certainly it was an 8-point swing the entire night. Hawks would go up by four, Grizz would go back up by four, and they're just going back and forth throughout the night. So that just speaks to the heart and the grit, that grit and grind that they talk about historically with the Memphis Grizzlies. That is just what, you know, the Grizzlies is all about. And I'm really just, you know, I'm really optimistic about your team in Memphis going forward, especially when you have a healthy JJJ. You got Ja Morant, Dylan Brooks, Desmond Bane, who I really like. Kyle Anderson, we'll see what they decide to do with him going forward. And just continue to find complementary pieces for this roster and construct a team like they've done with Utah, with Donovan Mitchell, around his talent, around what his strengths are, and to have Ja Morant really elevate his team play.
And I think the Grizzlies done a great job in this draft getting guys. You know, you were touching on Bane and the way that he can shoot the ball. He didn't miss last night. He only shot the ball twice. Like, he has to start shooting the ball more. I want to see that, because he can definitely shoot it. And you go back to his college days at TCU, and he was a great facilitator. So, to me, the way this offense is stalling when Ja is off the floor, let's put in Desmond's hands and see what he can do. And I know, like, I'm not a hit the panic button type person. Like, oh my God, Tyus, you know, it's not any of that, but it's just not working right now. And you've got to figure that out. And maybe, you know, Tyus at any point, he could maybe, you know, turn that corner and go back to what he was doing midseason form last year. You know, it may just be a little bit of rust coming off of the injury and then bouncing back into the season so quick. It's, you know, Brandon Clark has looked awful as well. So, you know, there's a couple guys that just don't look good right now. But I think you got to, I know early in the season there was an interview and Dylan Brooks was asked, does this team have playoff aspirations? And his answer was, hell yes. It was not like there was no hesitation. It was emphatic, hell yes, we have playoffs. You know, like aspirations, that's what we want to do. We want to make the playoffs. And so as a coaching staff, I think Jenkins, obviously he's a young coach. He done a good job in some areas last year, but there were some things where he just needed to get better. And I think that he's going to do that as he grows as a coach. But I think at times he gets caught in a rut and he's scared to make changes. Or maybe scared is not the right word, but he doesn't make changes because he just sticks with the same. And sometimes you need to make those changes. You know, Nick Nurse is a great example of seeing something that's not working and making a change in the middle of a game. A younger coach he made those changes and led his team to a championship. And so those are things that the coach has to grow as well. But I love Desmond Bane. I could not believe that the Grizzlies landed him when they made that trade on draft night, moved up to 30. it was just nuts because, you know, I mentioned Isaac earlier. He was like, Bane was the one guy. Hey, if we can move up in the draft, this is the guy that I want to move up to get. And then the Grizzlies went and done it. So that was, we're definitely, I can't speak for all Grizzlies fans, but I know here at Hoopball Grizz, we're excited that they got Desmond Bane. I think that he is going to be around for a while. I think that he is going to be a good NBA player for sure. I wanted to ask you something about your roster. You know, the Hawks made a lot of moves in free agency this offseason. And, you know, it's to put those veteran guys around some of this youth to be a little bit more competitive. But I asked my co-host this last night, and I want your take on it because you follow the Hawks a little bit more, so you know this roster a little bit better. Do you think, you know, you guys go out and you sign Bogdan Bogdanovich. I love him. Please don't take this as me bashing him. But I watch, because the Hawks being the East Coast time zone, I watched a lot of Hawks games on the league pass last year because of these young guys, because of Trae Young. Is Bogdan Bogdanovich that much better than Kevin Huerter that he deserved that type of contract? In your opinion, where do you think that line is with those two?
I think it's too early to tell. I think that with Bogdan Bogdanovich, he has the tenure as far as a few more years in the NBA and obviously overseas play. So he's a more seasoned player. So I think in that regard, that's what helps him command his money. And one thing that, you know, Kevin Huerter is trying to grow as a playmaker. We know that. He's trying to be better on the defensive end, and we've seen both of those things this year. And his shot is a little, you know, more polished, you know, going into this season because he has continuity with this team. He's been here. He's come off the bench. He started. Whereas this is a new role for Bogdanovich. He's on a new team. But one of the things that I really liked about Bogdanovich, even though his shot has not been falling, is that he's a guy that's going to do whatever it takes to win. And in a couple sample sizes I've mentioned in the two preseason games versus the Grizzlies and one of the games versus the Magic, game one versus the Bulls when he was struggling, and last night, when his shot's not going, he tries to do other things to help win. He crashes the boards. He tries to set up players getting assists or getting hockey assists. He, you know, gives effort on the defense end, and he might get a steal or just play hard defense on a player to force him to pass out. He does the little things to help a team win, and those little things are going to matter down the stretch. His shot will come. His shot will be there. And he's a really good facilitator. A lot of people complain on the Hawks side of things when Rondo hasn't been playing early in the preseason. We have Brandon Goodwin, and they're like, oh, we don't have a guard in the starting lineup. We don't have a point guard in the starting lineup. They've given that responsibility to Bogdanovich, and him and Huerter have kind of shared it, and they've both done very well in those roles, and they've both shown that potential. But I think what separates the two is Bogdanovich's willingness, and I'm not saying that Kevin Huerter didn't have this, the willingness to go get the boards, to give us another possession or crash the board, to push the break, really go and push the break and start initiate the offense. He does little things outside of scoring points that really help a team. So then the nights where he is getting 6-7 rebounds, because there's been three or four games so thus far in this early season where he's had 7 rebounds, which was a huge shock to me. I'm like, he has 7 rebounds as a 2-guard. And Kevin Huerter gets more assists. But I feel like right now, with Bogdanovich being a consummate professional, he's a guy that no matter where you plug him, whether he's struggling or not, he's going to give you consistent energy and consistent effort. And I think he can do a little bit more than Kevin Huerter at this point in his career. But like I said, Kevin Huerter is only a 3-year player in the league. He's coming off an injury last year. He's not injured this year. He's fully healthy. He's rounding into form, but it's going to, you know, take some time for him to truly solidify himself. Like, okay, he is better than Bogdanovich. I think it's too early to tell, but I think that Bogdanovich does some things outside of scoring and shooting that maybe, like I said, maybe Kevin Huerter is doing a little bit better than, but as far as shooting aspect, but the rebound and the other little things that really matter in winning games, game in the game out. And that could really stand out in the playoff series, a guard getting 7 rebounds. That is a huge stat right there, because you never know. if they're, that's on the offensive end or that is on the defensive end trying to initiate the break. And so right now I give Bogdanovich a nod, but they're both coming off the bench, and I love the energy that they're both giving off the bench and initiating offense and knocking down shots, more so for Herter. But I know that his shot is going to come, so I'm not really worried about Bogdanovich to this point.
Okay. I was just looking at the contracts and stuff, and like I said, I'd watched a few games. Obviously not as many as you have, but I like Bogdanovich a lot. And when there were talks about him leaving Sacramento, I'm like, man, if the Grizzlies made a move on him because of his age, I like him with a fit with the Grizzlies core. So, you know, it was not any way, shape, or form a slide on Bogdanovich. I just look at Herter and what he can do. And I didn't even consider the rebounding thing because Herter's not much of a rebounder. But that's to me, I just feel like maybe the Hawks rushed it a little bit on the rebuild because you have got, you know, you Cam Reddish, DeAndre. I think they had a great draft last year and a lot of talent there. And then, you know, you went out and you made these moves where you got Rondo and Gallinari and Chris Dunn. And then later on Bogdanovich. And I'm like, I'm worried about stunting the growth of some of these younger, talented guys. And maybe they do a great job, you know, at like, one of the things, whenever they signed Gallinari, somebody in the front office of the Hawks, I was watching a video, and he said that they made it clear to Gallinari, hey, you're going to be coming off the bench behind Collins before they ever signed the contract. And they said Gallinari was very receptive to that. So I think as long as they're focused on developing these young guys rather than just getting in here and competing, because I think, you know, getting into the playoffs in the Eastern Conference is significantly easier than it is in the Western Conference. So I think that the Hawks could easily be a playoff team this year. But what's your goal? Is your goal just to make the playoffs, or do you want to win championships? And to me, if you want to win championships, you've got to have these young guys develop. You know, you've got to have Cam Reddish, you know, see where he's going to go and what he's going to do and how DeAndre Hunter is going to continue to develop. And even Herter, you know, you got Trae Young is not old by any stretch of the imagination. He's a young guy too. So you got a lot of good young talent on this team. And I hope that, you know, the moves that they made does not stunt the growth of these, the young guys.
And that is a legit concern. I know that's a lot of people talking on Twitter about, did we jump the gun too fast, especially with the deep free agent class next year that the Hawks potentially missed out on because they filled out their roster this year. But Tony Ressler, the owner here, was not bashful. He said, we were going to spend money this offseason, and he tasked, Travis Schlenk to spend that money this offseason. And a lot of people were worried about stunning the growth. You bring in a Gallinari when you have Collins, bringing in a Bogdanovich when you have Kevin Herter, bringing in Solomon Hill and Tony Snell when you have Cam Reddish and DeAndre Hunter. But the thing is, they're still getting opportunities on this team thus far early on. But the one thing that the Hawks young players really spoke to this offseason was that they really needed a veteran presence. They need vets. Although, you know, Vince Carter wasn't, you know, producing large numbers, his, you know, presence as a vet, you know, helping them work game in and game out, noticing little things to slow down the game for these players, to add more of that on this team, bringing in a Rondo, to add more of that to this team is going to help develop them even more because they're going to compete day in and day out because they have to compete for these minutes. And I think competition always brings the best out in people. And when you're competing in practice, that translates on the court. I think that's the biggest difference that we're seeing this year is that these young players are more confident, but they have to work day in and day out to eat, to get their opportunity to play and showcase their skills and contribute to this team. And I really tip my cap to Travis Schlenk and the coaching staff for really preaching this we mentality because that's what you're seeing right now. Gallinari facilitating, you know, being a veteran presence, being a steady hand in the second unit when healthy. Rondo on the bench, clapping, coaching, talking to young guys, really getting into the game, encouraging people, talking to Trey, sitting with him in the media room. Solomon Hill, his energy that he provides in defense and in practice and telling people, hey, we got to buy in on it. They have many of these voices that are only going to help better the young players for them to have someone to lean on and gain guidance on. that, because sometimes, you know what I'm saying, you get a lot of minutes, but those minutes are not productive minutes for young players sometimes. Yes, they're, you know, they're going through the trial and error phase, trial by fire, but maybe that's not the best development for some of these players. Maybe it is competing in practice, having someone that plays a similar position who's had more years in the league that can, they can compete hard against in practice, and then afterwards they take them aside, show them a new move, watch some film, show them, hey, you're doing this, but if you do this, this will take your game to the next level. Someone outside of the coaching staff to kind of have, you know, some coaches on the roster amongst the players, you know, rooming with them, lodging with them, eating with them, unlike a coach can do at times. And I think that those things are going to help kind of progress this franchise forward and really further progress these young players. But you're absolutely right. There's a lot of people who are really concerned that it could stunt the growth. And what we're seeing is that these young wings, the Magic City Trio, as I call them, they're not afraid. They're not afraid. They're confident. They're competing. And they're coming into games with a lot of confidence in their respective games. And that's what I like to see. And I think that is these veteran players really enabling these young players, but the competition that they're getting in practice. So that's something that I'm going to continue to look at as the season progresses for the Hawks.
And that's the right veteran is key. Solomon Hill was with Memphis for a little while last year, and Jay Crowder, and those guys were great in that, not necessarily on the floor so much, but their leadership and what they brought to the locker room. Those guys were fantastic. And, you know, I know that Solo is going to be great at that, but, you know, a guy like Gallinari, I don't know that I've ever seen him in that position. And you know what Rondo brings to the table, you know, playoff Rondo is obviously completely different than what you're getting in the regular season. So, you know, the things, the wisdom that Rondo can bring to the game for Trey, and Trey already has great vision, excellent passer. And you get a guy like Rondo around, and just small things like minor adjustments can make a huge difference. And so, you know, if you're getting these vets in here, they're willing to kind of take these guys under their wing per se and, you know, help elevate their game rather than, you know, being selfish and saying, hey, you know, I still deserve to be out there. You know, I don't care about this young guy. And that would be my only concern. But, you know, I say that, you know, the Gallinari thing was, hey, you're going to be the backup. And he accepted that role. So as long as the veterans kind of have a clear cut, hey, this is our goal, this is what we're working with, and they're on board with that, you definitely get a big boost from those guys, for especially for the younger guys that are still learning. You know, yeah, it's, they've been playing basketball their whole life, but the game is different. It's completely different when you step up from college to the NBA level.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And to talk about, you know, you mentioned Trey. We mentioned Trey a lot on this podcast, who had a wonderful game last night. And it brings up the conversation that we've had, the Ja Trey conversation that's been on Twitter. Who is better? And I know that you talked about, it's funny, actually, we talked about, is there bad blood between them? And you talked about, you know, Ja Morant mouthing something to him at the end of the game, apparently calling Trey Young trash. And then I look on Twitter today, Trey Young tweeted a GIF of Grayson Allen seemingly looking like he's trying to take a swipe at Trey Young in a double team situation, and Trey Young calling that out. And then next thing you know, Jaren Jackson Jr. is calling that cap on Twitter. And then you have Ja Morant laughing. So I cannot wait till they match up again, as this is a team, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more later in the program, how we wish that these two teams, geographically, they're not far apart, only 7-hour drive, but we wish that they played 4 times a year, because these are two young teams, similar timelines, very competitive, very gritty now, that we would just love to see them compete. But as far as the Ja and Trey comparison, people are trying to argue for who. So I'm going to kick it to you, because you wanted to take a stance, and I'll take the other stance as far as where do you sit on this conversation, looking at the player that you're going to talk about.
All right, sure. I'll jump into that. Before I get into that, though, Mark Stein just tweeted out that apparently Chris Dunn is having ankle surgery on Wednesday.
Yeah.
No timeline for his, like the recovery timeline to be determined. So I don't have... And I've not really, I hadn't watched a ton of the preseason games. Has he played any games for you all, or has he been dealing with this ankle injury since he got there?
He's been dealing with the injury since he's got here. So we haven't really seen him. Luckily, we signed him to a very friendly contract. So it doesn't really hurt us on the books if he's not playing. And we have Rondo back now. Brandon Goodwin's gotten minutes, but we also alluded to Bogdanovich and Herter doing some of the ball handling responsibility. That's a hit on a defensive end because we know that Dunn is a defensive player, but it gives these other guys a chance to, you know, continue to grow confidence in their game and playing within the system, playing with these guys, and hopefully build some continuity there. And then you just can plug Chris Dunn in defensively and then let his offensive game come to him when that happens. So we wish you a speedy recovery, Chris Dunn. But back to the conversation, because I'm really interested to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, for sure. So the Ja versus Trey versus Ja, whichever way you want to flip it here, you know, there's been a lot of this back and forth, and it's Grizzlies fans, and sometimes it's not even Grizzlies and Hawks fans. It's just NBA fans in general comparing these two. And for me, and you and I kind of talked about this off air a little bit, but I don't think there's not much of a comparison between the two. And that's not to say that one is significantly better than the other. Their games are so different. They're so, like, these are the similarities. They're both up-and-coming stars. They both play point guard. And they both have insane vision and are excellent passers. Past that, their games are totally different. Ja Morant is explosive. He's going to the rim. He's dunking on guys. And Trae Young is going to shoot it from the logo. Like, Trae is far and away. If I'm at the end of the game and I need 3 points to tie the game, I want Trae Young with the ball because his shot is that much better than Ja Morant's. Trae can just shoot better than Ja. I think both of these guys can create space. They can, you know, each of them respectively can do what they do at an extremely high level, but there's not a ton of comparison because Trey's not going to the basket trying to dunk on guys. He's going to cross them up, create space, and knock down a three. Ja's going to try and dunk on everybody. Or, you know, he's going to the rim. He's drawing the contact. And it's just, I think it's more apples and oranges rather than, you know, like trying to compare these two guys. Love them both. It's just not, there's not enough there for me to really sit down and say, okay, who would I rather have leading my team? You look at their, like, the rookie stats. This is Trae Young. He finished with 19 points and 8 assists. Ja Morant was 18 and 7. So the rookie numbers were not that far apart. Just two completely different guys. And that's, you know, I hear on the argument side for Ja, well, look at the record, the team records for the two. Again, it's apples to oranges. The Grizzlies roster significantly better than the roster that Trae Young had in Atlanta in his rookie season. So I don't think there's much to argue about. I like both of the guys. If I need a shot at the end of the game, if I need a three, I'm taking Trae. If I need a two, I like Ja because I like his ability to get to the bucket.
Yeah, and I know for me, it's kind of hard to compare the two as well. Like you said, they play the same position. They can both get into the paint. They both have a little floater to them. Obviously, Ja has a little bit more explosiveness and a little bit more lift, and he's going to dunk on you, whereas, you know, Trae Young has a better outside shot. But Trae Young, this is also Trae Young's third year in the league versus Ja Morant's second. So it's really hard to compare the two. They didn't come in the league at the same year like a Luka Doncic and a Ja Morant, which everyone compares the two. I know that chatter has quieted because Luka Doncic was on the better roster and his team had more success, so therefore it looked like he was a better player than Trae Young, even though Trae Young was putting up numbers respectively as well in Atlanta, but just with less talent around him. And now that he has the talent around him, now you have the Stephen A. Smith tweeting saying, I guess we can't talk bad about Trae Young now. But I know you keep that same energy because y'all were riding the Luka train and now you want to jump on the Trae train. You know, y'all keep that same energy. Let us continue to work and do our thing here in ATL. But as far as for Ja Morant, it's a second year. A lot of those rookies in that second year, they have a little slump and then they ascend. Ja Morant started the year pretty hot, but he's going to have to do that because with the injuries that you said, and maybe now the rosters have kind of caught up to each other. And maybe we can say that even with the injuries, Atlanta's roster is a little bit better at this point right now than the Grizzlies roster. So it's really hard to compare because Ja Morant, you know, he's explosive. He gets to the rim. He penetrates. He finishes. He gets to the free throw line. But he has to facilitate as well. And that's a lot of pressure on a young guard, especially when he has to deal with a lot of injuries. He has a lot of weight on his shoulder, whereas the weight that's on Trey's shoulders, he had that the last couple of years. And now the weight is not as much. The burden is not much as much on him this year because they added talent around him. So it's really hard to compare the two. But you're absolutely right. They're both exceptional talents. They're both all-stars in my book. They're both ascending young guards. They're both stars in my book. They're both stars and have superstar potential. And like I said, it's just really hard to compare the two when they both do some things. They do some things similar and they have a similar position, but they also have things that make them distinctively different in their respective games. It's like trying to compare Michael Jordan to LeBron James. Both are considered one of the greatest players of all time, but both do things differently, and they both have things that they're both great at in their own respect. So it's kind of hard to compare the two, but it's a very interesting conversation nonetheless, and people are going to continue to have it. They're going to have it with, you know, with Ja Morant and Zion, which, I mean, come on, guys. Like, they're going to do that with Trae Young and Luka. They're going to do this with Trae Young and Ja. They're going to do it with it's just what NBA fans do. They always compare players to other players because, I mean, it's just what they do. They look at championships. They look at statistics. They look at numbers. They look at dunks, wins. There's so many other things that they, you know, look at. But when as far as their games are different. It's the same conversation that people have when they knock James Harden. They say, James Harden, I hate watching James Harden play. He's not that good. All he does is get to the free throw line. But yet he's still one of the most prolific scorers in the league. And this is a guy who was out of shape at strip clubs, had to quarantine for 4 days, came back last night and had 44 points and 17 assists. Who could come off the street after 4 days of rest and do that?
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's some of the conversations just blow my mind. I like to step back and just enjoy. I'm a Grizzlies fan. I cover the Grizzlies, but first and foremost, I'm a basketball fan. You know, I enjoy watching the game, whether it's, you know, it's the Grizzlies, Hawks, Lakers, Celtics. I can watch any two teams play. I don't care. I love watching the game. And so I can step back and watch and understand that I'm not a fan of watching James Harden shoot the ball from the free throw line 20 times a game, but I know the talent that it takes in order for him to get to the free throw line that many times in a game. So it's not a fun style of basketball to watch, but it's effective. And, you know, it's the memes going around, you know, the chunky James Harden memes. And I'm like, yeah, like you say, 44 and 17.
All right. And the last conversation we wanted to have on this joint hoop ball collaboration today with Hoopball Hawks and Hoopball Grizz was we talked about, man, we just wish that, you know, Ja Morant and Trae Young had more opportunities to play each other in the regular season. It's a fun matchup, and I'm sure the next game, which will be probably in the back half of the schedule as far as the NBA goes that has not been released, will be a very heated battle in Atlanta, especially with the chatter and the trash talk between Ja Morant and Trae and Jaren Jackson Jr., who did not play in this matchup, but I'm certain he will be healthy and will have something to say in that next matchup, which will add some fuel to the fire. But I know the Hawks will have more pieces. They'll have Capella, they'll have Gallinari. So it's gonna be a fun matchup. And I know Adam Silver's been talking about the potential expansion that can happen. I think it's eligible, I want to say 2023, 2024. And David, you can correct me if
I think it's 2023. I'm not 100%. I can look it up real quick though.
Yeah, I know it's one of those years, but I know in the expansion conversations, you know, every city wants to be pick me. I mean, it takes a lot to house an NBA franchise. You have to have the Fortune 500 companies to fill up the season ticket slots there. You have to have the arena. You have to have the fan base in a market that is starving for a team for all those, you know, pieces to be successful. That's why I know in the New Orleans front, that's why there's been talks about if it wasn't for Zion Williamson, New Orleans wouldn't be in New Orleans anymore because of the lack of Fortune 500 companies down there in New Orleans. So you're looking at cities across the league, Seattle, who obviously housed the franchise for years upon years, and they lost their franchise to Oklahoma City, which housed a displaced New Orleans team because of the hurricane back in 05, 06, and they really showed out for that team, and now the Oklahoma City Thunder exists, and they moved Seattle out of there because Seattle didn't want to build a new arena. So I know Seattle's been starving for a team up there, and that's a huge market, a great sports town up there with almost every – pretty much every professional sports team there. They're getting an NHL team, so they're going to have every professional sports team there outside of an NBA franchise. So they're a very attractive market. Kansas City has an NBA-ready arena, and they really support their Chiefs well. When the Royals are doing good, they really support the Royals. And when the Kansas City Jayhawks come into town, they play in a Sprint Center down in downtown Kansas City. They really pack that arena. So they're basketball fans there. It's a basketball area. And so I think that Kansas City could be successful. Louisville with the KFC Yum Center, they packed that arena for the Louisville Cardinals, and that's an NBA-ready arena, and that's a pretty big market there in a basketball state of Kentucky that just cranks out players from between the two institutions, actually multiple institutions. When you look at UK, Louisville, Western Kentucky, Eastern Kentucky, I mean, it doesn't matter, all corners of that state, Murray State, John Morant from Murray State. They put out players, and Morehead State with the list goes on of schools in Kentucky that put out talent. So I think those are natural fits, but depending on where they put them, let's just say for hypothetical purposes, they do Kansas City and they do Seattle. That could be an opportunity for, I know Memphis fans are on the fence that they love playing in the Western Conference, but the Eastern Conference is a little bit easier. And as far as travel, you can go to probably more games. And it's better because you only have one time zone to deal with in the Eastern time zone with games and Central time zone versus having to worry about the Central time zone matchups. And then you got the Mountain time. Then you got the West Coast games. So it's less time zones you got to think about. But as far as the expansion, I know personally I would love to see the Hawks and the Grizzlies in the Southeast Division, and that's just a natural rivalry, and we go at it for years to come, especially being 7 hours drive apart. What is your thoughts on the expansion, likely places, and would you like to see a Hawks Grizzlies rivalry actually play out as it was a heated contest in all three of their matchups thus far this year?
It seems like the Grizzlies Hawks rivalry is going to happen whether we're playing each other four times or not. So if they do the expansion and it ends up where they're playing each other four times a year, that I'm all about it. Like, inject it into my veins. Give me all of that. It's two young teams that have great young talent. What is not to like about that? Like, that you have, if they're playing each other four times, you've got guys like up-and-coming stars, superstar potential with Trey and Ja. It's an easy sell for the NBA if you've got these two teams playing four times. I think that's, to me, a no-brainer. But, again, it depends on, okay, where are you going to put these teams? And Kansas City was not actually, prior to our conversation, Kansas City never even crossed my mind. I was looking Seattle, maybe Vegas. They just moved the Raiders into Vegas, so maybe more professional teams are okay with moving into Vegas, where that's kind of been frowned upon in the past. But I think that, I don't know that the population around Vegas is enough, but I think that Vegas gets enough traffic that it will support a professional team with ease. There are plenty of cities that you can look at. I think Louisville's another great one that you were talking about, because Kentucky is a basketball state. A lot of talent. There was a guy came out of Louisville. He didn't play for Louisville. He actually was signed. He signed with Louisville, but decided to go for the draft. Jay Scrub. He played at John A. Logan. He's a guy that, ton of talent. If he hadn't had academic struggles, he would have been with a Division I school, and he probably would have been a first rounder, in my opinion. The Kentucky in general turns out a lot of great talent. So I think that, Louisville would be another good city. And what do you got? Louisville there's nothing really. I guess college is about all they got, right?
College basketball is all they got. And I know Lexington may be the bigger city itself, but obviously you ain't going to you ain't going to, you know, outshine, you know, UK and Big Blue Nation. You're not going to outshine them, even though they have a pretty big arena there. I think the Louisville has the newer arena as far as between the two. So Louisville and being on the river, you know, having some Fortune 500 companies out of Louisville, that it makes them a little more attractive than a Lexington.
I was digging, trying to find the year that they can do the expansion. I didn't find a definite answer on that. So I'll keep searching later on, and I'll retweet this episode with the answer to that question, unless maybe you find it before we get done here. But, you know, I think a lot of it's going to depend on how many teams are they looking. Are they just adding two? Are we going to add four? And where are they going to go? Because moving the teams, you know, you've got Minnesota, which could easily move over to the Eastern Conference, and Memphis, New Orleans. There's three teams there that could easily bounce one way or the other. And I think that, you know, it makes sense. If you're going to do a Southeastern Conference, I think that, you know, you have Memphis, New Orleans, Atlanta, Miami. Orlando. You know, that's pretty, you know, I don't know who else you're pulling into that, really.
I don't know. Charlotte is, you know, a question mark. And right now, the only other team I can't talk outside of that is the Washington Wizards, who can easily be bumped up into the Atlantic Division, and then they, you know, work out something there.
Yeah, and that's also where do you put this other expansion team? You know, if you're doing four teams and you plug three teams in the West and one team in the East, you know, if you go, maybe they look at Pittsburgh, you know. Like, who knows? You never really know what they're going to do. Are they going to give Vancouver another team? You know, it didn't work out that well with the Grizzlies up there. But I think a lot of it with an expansion team, if it's not a basketball area, I think that your hopes are that the expansion team is competitive early, because St. Louis had the Rams for a little while, and then they moved them back out to the West Coast because they weren't selling seats.
Right.
Well, they weren't selling seats because after the greatest show on turf, the Rams were awful for a long time, and people don't want to go watch a bad product. And that's what, you know, that's what it boils down to. You get it. I think Seattle went without an NBA team, and they, you know, they had an NBA team, and now they've gone without it. I think if they put a team back in there, that area is going to support the team and they're going to do well. So I feel like that is a lock for sure. I love your Kansas City idea because of where it is in the country. I think that gives kind of that little pot of the country a great, like, that's just a great area that, you know, you got Iowa and Nebraska and Missouri. You know, you've got a lot of states right there together, pretty close to Kansas City, that you're going to pull a lot of fans. You know, you can get a lot of fans from that area, and they're probably rooting for other teams right now. But, you know, I kind of alluded to it when we were talking off air. When you get a local team, even though they may not necessarily be your favorite team, you're going to support them. You know, you're going to be around. Like, when you want to go to games, your favorite team's coming to town. Okay, you're going to go. You don't care that your local team is not that great. But I hope that they actually do four teams. And I don't care either way. If Memphis is still in the West, I'm fine with it. If they get moved to the East, I'm fine with that as well. There's some teams in the East that I would love to have the rivalries with. You know, like the Hawks, Grizzlies, that's one. And then I think Charlotte is another team with a lot of young talent that, you know, they're going to be on the upswing here. And that would be another interesting matchup for the Grizzlies if they do move to the East. So, there's a lot to unpack there, man. If they're only doing two and I had to pick two cities, I would say Seattle and Louisville.
Okay. Which, like I said, I you can't go wrong either way. And like you said, it depends on, you know, geographically where they want to do it. If they want more teams out west to kind of shift some teams that are on the midline of the United States, like a New Orleans, like a Memphis, like a Minnesota over, then that makes sense. If they want to introduce into a new market in Louisville, who who've been really begging for it. I mean, they were begging for the Raptors to come there this year. They started campaigns to get them there, man. I mean, and it's campaign season down here in Georgia with the Senate runoff coming up. And I mean, I'm sure they have some ads. They have some ads up there in Louisville saying, hey, you know, get to Twitter, you know, get your Twitter fingers ready, you know, try to get an NBA team here, even though we can't support them, if we can support them with ratings and TV ratings, which is going to be interesting to see. We talked about, obviously, the Raptors are in Tampa right now. They already have two teams in Florida as far as the NBA goes with the Magic and Heat, what the ratings are in Tampa now that they, quote, unquote, have a team there temporarily because of, obviously, the restrictions of travel in Canada with COVID-19. So it'll be interesting to see how successful they are ratings-wise and if they do put a team in Tampa, which would be kind of weird with it being an hour from Orlando, if that. So it's a very interesting conversation. It will be something that materializes throughout, you know, the next few years until that decision has to be made. But with that, it was a wonderful conversation. It was very much more of a positive conversation, even though on you guys' end, you guys did not get the win last night, but it was an entertaining game nonetheless.
Got to throw some good salt in the wound as we sign off here.
I'm not trying to put no salt in the wound. I'm just saying that we kept it optimistic. We kept it positive, and there's a lot of good things to look at for the Grizzlies going forward. And I wish you guys nothing but the best, except that second time when you guys roll up against the Grizzlies. And for me personally, when you guys play the Pelicans, you know where I gotta sit. You know where side of the fence I gotta sit there.
I got you. I understand, man. I understand. That's okay. We're beating the Pelicans this year. Enough trash talking. We're taking care of business against them. So, man, it's been a pleasure. Thanks again. I love doing the co-shows. When we meet again in the second half of the season, we got to run it back for sure.
Oh, we'll run it back. We'll run it back just like I know that you guys are really anxious of running this game back against the Hawks with all the chatter post game and on Twitter now between, you know, Hawks and Grizzlies players. It's going to be a fun one. But with that, tell them how they can connect with you. Obviously, this is a joint podcast. Tell them, you know, your normal signature off when you go off, and then I'll do my normal signature off. And then let the fans follow us both and tune in both for both wonderful content from two great programs here on Hoopball Network.
All right. You can get the show on Twitter at Hoopball Grizz. I am on Twitter at DWill2111. I love conversation, guys. Tweet questions at me. You know, we can go back and forth between the Hawks and the Grizzlies. I'll talk about anybody. Love basketball in general. So the show, Hoopball Grizz, I'm DWill2111. And then my co-host, Sam, he is at SammyB1118. And that's all I got. Thanks for tuning in, guys.
Thanks for tuning in. You already know who this is, a.k.a. your boy, at BradJarrett67. That is Brad, J-A-R-R-E-T-T, 67 on Twitter. Hit me up. Talk Hawks, talk basketball, talk football, talk sports in general. Ain't got a lot going on right now, so I love to conversate with you guys. And follow us at HoopBallHawks on Twitter. That is at HoopBallHawks on Twitter for the latest episodes and latest insight for your fantasy team as we put out injury reports here on HoopBall to help your fantasy purposes to make sure that you're putting in the right players for your lineup. So with that, we'll sign off. I will do my year. And you guys have a wonderful, wonderful new year.
This has been a HoopBall presentation.